Today's date is August 8th, and this is Adam Gregg interviewing Clarence Harms about his World War II experiences. Okay, Clarence, to start out, could you state your full name?
Clarence J. Harms.
And could you say the date and place of your birth?
Well, Washington Township, Plymouth County, that's all I know. I don't think I was born in a hospital. I think I was delivered at home.
And what was the date for that?
February 2nd, 1914.
And where did you live as you were growing up?
Same place, same farm, all my life till I got Paul, I suppose in my early 20s, I left home, started working out. There was 10 of us in the family, so I was towards the last end. I was next to last born. Five boys, four girls. Six boys, four girls.
And where did you go to school before the war?
Dalton Independence. Small village west of Lamar's. And that's all the schooling I had at 8 grades. At that time, of the whole family, my brother older than me got to go to high school. None of the rest of the kids did. Stay home and labor.
You said you left the farm when you were about 20 and went into the workforce. Where did you work?
Oh, boy. Well, I started out working for other farmers, and then I had a milk route, and then I went to work in Lamar's hatchery. And that was my last job, really. I did a little carpenter work after that, but not much.
What was your experience and your family's experience like during the Great Depression?
Well, I don't know. Everybody, neighbors were neighbors, and they got along good. Always had plenty to eat. Times were rough. Weather was dry. 36 was a very bad year. Just didn't get no crops at all. In fact, all the 30s were dry. Talk about dry weather now, but back then, this don't compare to what we had back then in the 30s. It was about 10 years. It was pretty bad. Very little rain. I remember in 36 we had all that snowstorms and roads was blocked and you couldn't get to town. And when the snowplow did go by, they had these maintainers push the roads open. They didn't have the equipment they got now. If you didn't go to town right away, you wouldn't get to town because tomorrow morning the roads would be blown shut again. So it was a rough winter that year. Snow was so hard the cattle could walk right over the top of the fence and everything. It was hard to get the roads open too. So, no, that I wouldn't care to go through the 30s again. And hot. July 4th, 1936, 111 degrees. And after that we had 104, 105, 106. It was hot, but it was dry heat, no humidity. That's about it.
Okay, do you remember your thoughts as war was breaking out in Europe before the U.S. got involved?
No, not really too much. I was driving in a car and I had the radio on and I heard about the war, declared war. But I never enlisted. And then my draft number come up, and my boss got me deferred for a few months, and then right away I got another notice. And he said, well, I can probably get you deferred. I said, no, I said, they'll probably keep after me. I just as well go and get it over with. So that's when I went in May. I went to Omaha. Went to Jefferson Barracks, Missouri. They called that Jefferson Barracks, but I didn't see no barracks, so I lived in tents. And then I went to, when I got through my basic training, which was something, went to, I think it's in Utah, some replacement camp, and from there was, went to Walla Walla, Washington, Madras, Oregon, and then I finally got a furlough. Come home and I got back to base, and then they put us on a troop train and hauled us all the way across the United States to Virginia, and that was towards Christmas, and just like you said, Christmas Eve, they loaded us on the boat, sat out on the pier there waiting till daylight, went over on the convoy. Spent close to a month on water on a small boat about, about 100 of us guys in that compartment of the boat. I know it was, I think, 6 years high, the bunks. We was only in that small apartment because we went over on a Liberty ship, loaded with lumber. And in the daytime, those boats would all scatter out. And at nighttime, I got up one time and looked, and I was surprised how close those boats were together through the night. And in the morning, they'd all be scattered out again. Went through Mediterranean Sea, went through the gate there, one boat at a time. Mediterranean was rough, very rough sea sometimes. Then we got in by Italy, put us on a small boat and took us ashore there, didn't dock it. There they loaded you on trucks. In the Army, you were just a number. Oh, they just packed you in those trucks. It was something terrible. I mean, couldn't hardly all get in there. Took us to a replacement center. And from there, they sent me, flew me back to Africa to join an outfit, the Ordnance. And we were there, I don't know how many months. Then they put us on the boat again and took us to Italy, and then we went up through Italy. That was the start of it. Then in Italy, we were in southern Italy, all the way all through Italy, pretty much. Northern Italy is a lot nicer than southern Italy. I saw a lot, you know. Remember the cows or horse pulling that water wheel with cans? Well, they still had them in Italy. I saw one. McCormick Deering tractor, 1020 McCormick Deering tractor. But the farmers were, it was really saving. They'd cut the grain, they'd shock it, then the whole family would be up there and picking up what was left. There's some straw here and some. They picked up all that stuff, went through the fields. Thrashing machines were very obsolete. It didn't have a blower, just shook it out in the back on the canvas. And then they fold the canvas up and some guys would carry it and they stack it that way. It didn't have a blower. Oh, I'll tell you, it was something. They all lived in cement houses. Not too many farmers lived on the farm. They lived in town. But those houses were cool. Kind of damp, but they were cool. They weren't hot. So went up, way up to Fennel on the, I forgot what seed that was. I got it all in a little book, but my daughter's got the book. Where I went from, where I went from, the days I traveled. She's got that information, but, well, she wanted it, so I give it to her, so I thought, keep it in the family on the way. Just, and I kind of miss it. I shouldn't have done that yet, but I did. Now we, when you'd move, you'd sleep alongside the road, wait for orders, you know, which you had to do a lot of times, hurry up and wait. The people around here, you think you see hungry people. I'll tell you, they didn't see nothing. I'm not going into detail on those guys, but who, what they ate. They was always there. We come out of the mess hall, especially in southern Italy. There's always some Italians there for the leftover food. And most of the guys would let them empty your kit, what you had left, you know. They'd put it in a gallon pail or something. And some guys were on it. They just took the water and dumped it in the slop. They wouldn't give it to them. It was those kind of guys, too, you know. But they were hungry. I seen a guy we hauled the garbage out to cook. I went along with the cook one time out to where they had to dump the garbage, and it was pits, sloppy stuff. Dump it here and dump it there. And there was an Italian in there about ankle deep in the mush with his can picking up leftovers. I don't know if the people ate that or what they fed that to, but I'm surprised me didn't get sick. No, I tell you, a lot of these people are against a lot of this stuff, like with the Iraq war. I said, let's keep them over there. Don't get them over here. We don't want them over here, you know, because
I can stop the tape for a second.
Repair work on cars and Jeeps and stuff like that, trucks. We was always towards the back of the lines. I mean, we weren't up front, but I've seen different times. I've seen the airplanes, those P-30s, fly over with one motor shot out or something. But we never had any threats that they attacked us because we were back far enough. But still, we were close enough. We could hear the big guns going off up ahead, the artillery. You never had no shops to work in. You did all your work outside. You didn't have that. Some places we lived by, we got in buildings. Maybe had a cop, but most of the time in tents and a cop. I know it gets very dry over there in Italy. You walk the water, dust just flies, and they use good motor oil. Our driveway was quite long, and sprinkled the driveways, brand new motor oil. Eggs. At night we'd go out the village, you get a Jeep and go out the village and get eggs from the farmer, you know. It's only gets different that when you drive on the yard that the people knew what you wanted and they'd all come here. One egg, two eggs. This one had two or three eggs, that was a lot. And it cost us 50 cents a piece. Then we'd go home, take them to the camp and have fresh egg sandwiches. Guy from New York one time said, I was mostly with New Yorkers, these eggs are no good. I said, what do you mean, these eggs are no good? Well, they're supposed to run all over. I said, heck, you've been eating half rotten eggs all your life. You didn't know it. No, it's quite an experience. It's worth a lot of money to go through, but boy, sure glad to get out of it. I know when we was on the sea there, you go fishing out in the sea, these Italians would. A guy come in the boat one there, he's dragging the body up to shore. And some of the boys go over and got curious, you know, go over and look, and they couldn't eat supper that night. And I didn't go look because I figured what it was. And we had a good cook when he worked. But holidays, we always had good meals, you know, turkey, and we had good meals, but after that, why, somebody desired it. Mostly all what you call dehydrated foods, powdered milk, powdered egg. No, whenever we had fresh eggs, if you pulled guard duty at night, had to take turns. We slept in a tent, six in a tent. If they had fresh eggs, and you were one of the guys pulling guard duty, they'd wake you up, hey, wake up, we got fresh eggs today. You'd go eat breakfast. But if you didn't have fresh eggs, they'd let you sleep. Entertainment, we never had no entertainment there. A lot of these reasons. Cigarettes. We could sell them to the Italian for $20 a carton. See, I didn't smoke, so I would take the good black Camel, Lucky Strike, them good cigarettes, and trade with the boys there in the camp. And then we give them the Pall Malls and all this and that. And then I'd sell them to get $20. And one time I wanted them a little more money, and no, you don't give me the good cigarettes. They knew it too. But towns, I don't know. Hey, Fuji was bombed out quite bad, and seemed like there was always an odor there. The Italian people didn't seem to be too ambitious to clean up after the war, you know. Buildings were bombed down, they wouldn't touch them. Outside of that, why, glad to come home. Got seasick. They always say eat a lot before you get on the boat. Well, I couldn't eat that morning because they had those runny eggs. I couldn't eat them, they didn't taste it. So we got on the boat. If one guy gets sick, you're all gonna get sick. Because he's hanging his head over the railing, and pretty soon you're running for the railing. And then you get a little better, and you try to get in line to eat food. The minute you get down there and smell food, out you go. You just couldn't do it. That's one of the darndest sickness there is, that seasickness. Boy, you're sick. I know I lost my razor that's in the shaving room. Went back to look for it, and it was gone. So I thought, well, I'll find another one. I kept looking in there and looking there. Finally, I found one, so I took that one, too. And then I had a razor again. Now, never got sick. Always being outside, sleeping in tents. I know one time we had a house for headquarters, but we slept in tents. We just got in there, they had the mess hall in there for dinner, and it started to rain. And I never thought it rained so hard as it did there. Gee, and we come out, and the water was just about touched the bottom of the bed. Our tent was all underwater, but didn't last long. It washed away. Every tent there, the whole works was underwater. So outside of that, why, glad to get home. It's about the end of my story, I guess.
Okay, I have some questions for you. We could go back in time a little bit. Do you remember where you were or what you were doing when you heard that Pearl Harbor was attacked?
Yeah, I was driving in my car. I think it was a 36 Chevrolet coupe. We come west of the place, and then we call that the bottom one, and go a mile north to get to the highway. I was driving down that road there. Remember exactly where I was when I heard her on the radio. But I never talked to him much. I figured, probably have to go yet. But never give it too much thought. Tell the kind someday you get. You got a number, draft number, you know, when they called that number, you had to go. I had a brother older than me. He went in the Army too, but maybe a few months after I did, he left too. Had a younger brother. He didn't have to go because, somebody had to stay home and help farm, I guess. And people felt kind of bitter about it, you know. A lot of people resented it. But I don't know. And when you had one guy in particular, he wouldn't go to the Army. He says, I'm not going, I don't care what, he said. And he didn't go. And when we got out, when we started coming home again from the Army, he kind of ducked aside, and he didn't have much to say. He felt kind of foolish, you know. But as far as terrorist deal, I don't know what to think about that, but I think we're doing the right thing getting rid of them if they can be done. I don't know if it'll ever be done, but what I can't figure out, all those guys that volunteered to go bomb, you know, to give their lives, that yeah, that's about it. Unless you've got any questions.
Oh, yeah, I've got a lot of questions.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your boot camp experience. What was that like for you?
Well, that was the roughest part, really. Got in JB, and you get in all those tents. And then they trained you. You made a squadron of about 48 men, I think. You go out in the drill field. And you know how you're thinking about home. You're not, your mind ain't on the Army when you first get in there. And it was really, really comical. You gotta have to kind of laugh about it. You see a bunch over there training and marching away, and he'd give a command and they'd go all directions. And they had what they called a goon platoon. Send this guy to goon platoon, that guy. And we had a good trainer there for a while. He took all that stuff first. Finally, at last, And we finally wound up in the goon platoon two different times. Oh, they give you a rock. Now, this is your right side, this is your left. Give you a rock in one hand, see? Remember, that's your right. When they give those commands, you dup, 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 dup. Supposed to go that way. Oh, to get that to going first, that one. Because you wasn't thinking about the Army, you were thinking about home. But it's comical. You had to get up. Well, if you wanted to shave before anything, you had to get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to get shaved, get cleaned up, and then you call for breakfast. Now, we had to walk across the parade grounds, and you couldn't walk across there alone. You had to go in groups. So they blow the whistle, go for breakfast, get across the parade ground, and then same way back. And like in training, too, you was out there on the parade ground. It make you stand at attention. I mean, that may be an hour, maybe more, in the sun. And that buddy next to you dropped down. You didn't stop to help him. You stayed at attention. Nobody went in there until after. No, it was kind of rough there. And then you got a lot of KP and all this, that low-down work, you know. I don't know how many weeks really, I don't remember how many weeks we was there, but I would say about 3 weeks, more, 4 weeks. That's all you did. Every morning, get up, go to the parade ground, walk back, go to the dinner, go out the parade ground, out in the field where they had to practice. It wasn't on the parade ground, but they had the field out there. And line up. And then from there, then I got to Walla Walla, Washington, all these air bases. We was attached to the Air Corps. Madras, Oregon was just a new base. They had the barracks there. It wasn't a big base, but General Eisenhower's brother was commander of the base there for a while. I forgot what his name was. And then we went overseas. Yeah, it's almost a month on the water in that old boat. Sometimes you go out on a dock. But sometimes the waves are so deep they come over the front of the boat, and you had to be careful. It wouldn't get washed off. Yeah, that's about it.
How did they train you for your job as a repairman?
They didn't. They just sent me over there. mostly in the States when I first got in here. That's the trouble when you go over as a replacement. You always fill in here and fill in there. You're better off if you join and get in with an outfit and stay with it. If you get drafted, you get sent here, you get over there, you get there. You get all kinds of the dirtier jobs, you know. So you're really better off to, if you're going to go, join the Army and get in an outfit and you stay with his outfit. The way we were, we was this, we was here, we was there. You shipped all different. You didn't really have any buddies for long. You had some buddies here. Yeah, and then they shipped you out or shipped that other guy out. And I know I lost, I think it was $10 or $20. I had my picture taken in Walla Walla, sent home, a photo take. And Lord and behold, before I got those pictures, I was sent out. And I gave a buddy the money to pay for the pictures. And that rascal didn't do it. He kept it. So I was running, but the photographer sent the picture to my mother, and they had to finish paying for him. Well, I had the money there, but that guy run off with it. The only money I lost in the Army. The only money I lost. He was from Kankakee, Illinois. I know that. That's about it.
Do you remember arriving in Italy or arriving in North Africa? And can you tell me what that was like?
Well, we arrived at Italy, I suppose, in the middle of the afternoon, where they loaded you on that truck and hauled your replacement. You wasn't in the replacement center too long. When we arrived there, we thought, boy, the weather is nice. It was in winter. I suppose in January. Remember, it had to be January. But when you went to bed that night, those tents, to get very damn cold. Oh, God, the first night you couldn't sleep good. Next night you put more padding on the bottom. You put your overcoat on the bottom, trying to keep warm. Finally, they gave you another blanket after 4 or 5 days, I suppose. Some guys made a makeshift stove, put in their tent. And some guy, I don't know, monkey with gas and stuff, got the tent on fire. The next day, a 6x6 truck went through with the guy picking up all the stoves out. No more stoves, you know. 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody was outside. They had to urinate, you know. It was funny. You had to get them going. You wasn't the only guy on that. No, it's kind of funny at times, but what's next?
What would you say was your single greatest fear during your time in the service?
Oh, God. I don't know where I really had that. Pulling guard. And when we first got there, of course they gave you a gun, but no bullets. You know, walking around with an empty gun. And the guy, he was pulling guard too. And I didn't see him, he saw me. He picked up a rock and threw it over there. Then later I come over, he's laughing about it. I said, well, you're lucky I didn't have a shell or I'd have shot you. Because that did scare me a little. You're over there, you're a stranger, you don't know nobody. No one's going to pranks, that was nothing. And rumors, that was nothing to start. When we got over there, they give each one a rifle off the boat. And every certain number, they get them submachine gun. And we got over there, and one kid, he was a young kid, he had a submachine gun. And I told him, boy, I'm sure glad I didn't get one of those. Why? I said, well, we get off, me, you're going to have to go up front and start shooting them. I said, we got rifles to carry for the. He was trying to trade that machine gun off. Now, rumors were easy to start in the Army. We go downtown, we look up in the air, about 2 or 3 weeks. Pretty soon, all the Italians were looking up in the air. No. Rumors. I suppose it's that way today, yeah. Weird rumors, but they're a lot better treated today than they were when we were in the Army. like Army life isn't just that bad.
So you mentioned you could hear the artillery. Were you ever in range of the artillery? Did you ever come under artillery attack?
No. We far enough back all the time.
Any air attacks or anything like that?
No. We've seen the bomber fly over a lot of times, but we weren't in those ranges. But you, like those stars, right? You get them for being in that battle area. Certain big old battle areas. If you're in there, you, I didn't even know that I was getting them until towards the end. But it all helped for getting discharged earlier, get points. Because I know one guy, he was from Washington, state of Washington. They took one of his away. Boy, he was mad. And another thing about getting in late, all their ranks are filled, you might say. You get what's left. Of course, if you're there so long, you get a raise, and I was up for sergeant, but I wasn't corporal long enough, so they didn't give me sergeant. No, it's hard to get a rating then. When what'd you do on finding pictures?
What were your feelings towards the enemy?
Well, they weren't too bad. I didn't see them with the Japanese when they burrowed Pearl Harbor. That I kind of got under my skin. And the rumor was that Franklin Roosevelt knew 2 days before this was going to come. That's what the I'm reading this history now. He was a great president, but he wasn't the most honest he was a skirt chaser. You think some of these are skirt chasers? He was bad. He was Secretary of the Navy. That's part I'm on now, where he's Secretary of the Navy. But outside of that, he did a good job when he got to be president. I saw his monument in Washington. Our daughter took us up there, and we saw all the monuments. But he's got a big one. He's got waterfalls. Saw the Vietnam War board. Yeah, that's my first picture. When I went in the Army. I didn't know we had a folder like that.
Did you ever have friends who were missing or killed?
No. Some of the guys that left after I did from Lamar's, we used to keep in contact. And I got a Christmas card from one buddy, and it had four-leaf clover in it. And I kept it in the war. I kept that four-leaf clover, and I got it hanging in the car today on my rearview mirror, four-leaf clover in a plastic case about that big around quarter. So I always think of him. All my guys that went to the Army and the buddy, most of them are all gone. And they're all close friends was. See. But I don't remember, well, they had some cousins killed in World War One, but World War Two, I think we got by pretty lucky.
You mentioned earlier your feelings about Roosevelt. What did you think of President Truman?
I don't know. He said, the buck stops here. That boy had guts. I think he was all right, yeah. It's either them or us. But he put a stop to it. They could have stopped with one, they wouldn't stop, so he gave them another one. But yeah, it's too bad they got all that stuff, but just think of the enemy it had. If the terrorists would have it, boy, they'd use them. They'd use them. So I don't know Bush is on the right track or not. I think he was misled on starting it, maybe. But he's got to get the blame, you know, somebody, you know. But I'll give him credit. He sticks to his guns. He don't change about. Nobody's going to change him on that. No, I think he's all right for president. Who's going to run next year on president?
If I could tell you, I'd be a rich man, probably. Let's talk a little bit more about the atomic bomb. What did you and your friends think about that at the time? Do you remember?
Well, it really wasn't discussed too much. It was, everybody was glad that it was over with, for one thing, but that wasn't discussed too much.
When you were in the service, did you always feel like you had plenty of supplies and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think we did for preparing. We had a truck go every day to the supply depot and get the stuff. I don't know where he had to go, how far he had to go, but the only thing was they had to wrap it so and all that rosin. And boy, it's going to pack, tear that stuff apart, you know, keep it waterproof. That was something. No, as far as supplies, why? I know my biggest complaint, I suppose, would be food. When we went over to give us sea biscuits, Spam, you know, big round biscuits. Oh, they was good. They was good. Every night you got one, you know. You were so sick of Spam, I would say, I never want to see it again. I haven't tasted it since. Had a young kid along, he was from Fonda, Iowa. We was in the same room. He got a Christmas present. Spam. Goddamn Spam. Goddamn Spam. I can still see that. That was the wrong thing. But people don't get it every day. I guess it's pretty good. I don't know. That and peas, green peas, green peas. Boy, they must have had a terrific crop of peas. Powdered eggs for breakfast. Not a food. But it kept you going. if you was hungry enough, you'd eat it.
Did you ever get to go on leave while you were overseas?
Yeah, we were lucky. Got to go to Rome 1 week. Our group and another group got together. They're each going to send, by the tent they go on, I think 6 men. And so our group called us together, and they put, if there's 10 tents, you got 10 chances to win. So they said, no, you draw. No, you're lucky, you draw. So I finally drew, and I got number one. So we got to go to Rome. How many guys after that? I don't think it lasted very long. They didn't get to go to Rome, but they did spend a week in Rome. I always wanted to go to Switzerland, but I never got there. But we did see Rome. Yeah, I forgot what priest, what cardinal was in office.